listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I also know firsthand what it is like to struggle. I found the cure to binge eating, and now I help people all over the world find food freedom. And on this show, I am here for you too. Imagine waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. Wouldn't that be amazing? That's the goal. So today I'm going to answer questions from listeners. You have questions, I have answers. I'm going to go over some of the questions that have been sent in. If you are watching the live stream on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment in the comment box or a question, and I'll answer that as well. Okay, so first question comes from Sandra. She says, can you talk about alcohol? I'm using alcohol to numb my feelings, or I give myself a treat after a difficult day. It invariably leads to overeating. I don't drink when I'm socializing. I drink when I've had a tough day and I can't leave the house because I'm taking care of a family member who can't be left unattended. So I can't go for a walk. I can't ride my bike, even if the family member is asleep. I may be bored, she says, or just looking for a shortcut, but a drink is handy and available and makes caregiving less onerous. And then I don't care about feeling stuck or feeling fat or less active due to age and weight and circumstance. Okay, well, Sandra, it sounds like you have a really tough job. It is hard to be a caregiver. It is hard to have to be there for someone 24/7. And it sounds like you're, as you said, you're using drinking and eating as a way to calm down, give yourself a break, give yourself a treat, as almost like a way to exhale. And the options you give to deal with your feelings are going for a walk or a bike ride. Those actually are just nice activities to do, but they don't help you process your feelings. So often people are told, hey, if you feel bad, here's what you do. Go for a walk, go ride your bike, walk your dog, brush your teeth, take a shower. One person said, hey, if I took a shower every time I was upset, I would just be like a total wrinkled prune all the time because I would always be in the shower. Showers don't help you process your feelings. Going for a walk, unless you're thinking, you know, and processing it, doesn't help you process your feelings. Going for a bike ride, same thing. Those are activities. So what is really important to do is to learn how to process your feelings wherever you are. And that means getting in touch with the thoughts about being stuck, your thoughts and your feelings about your situation. Even if you logically know that this is, you know, this is what you have to do, this is temporary, whatever it is that you tell yourself logically, you also get to have feelings about it. Even if you are happy to be a caregiver, you might have other feelings that aren't so benign and benevolent. And the idea is to recognize what that is, process, and then process them. And often when I say, well, you have to process your feelings, I get a blank stare, or I get a, oh, you mean like just sit in them? No, we cannot sit our way through our feelings any more than we can ignore them or drop them or positive think them away or gratitude them away or stuff them down or starve them away or any of the things that we do to try to ignore our feelings. The only way to get rid of feelings, as counterintuitive as it sounds, is to actually feel them. So how do you do that? Well, first, you have to identify, bravely identify what you are feeling. And remember, a feeling is just a reaction to a situation. It is not a character flaw. What I hear from a lot of women is, I don't want to get mad. Like, I'm not an angry person. Okay, that's true. But maybe you're a person who's angry. What I hear from men is, well, I don't want to be a wuss and be like cry or something. Like, I don't want to be vulnerable. Like, that's, oh, no, I'm a dude. Yeah, well, you're a dude who's a person And vulnerability doussn't make you a wuss. Vulnerability makes you a person. It doesn't mean anything about you or your character or your likability or your lovability. It's just a reaction to a situation. So the first thing to do, Sandra, if we're talking about alcohol, which makes it easier for you to turn to food, both different weeds, same root. So what is it that you are feeling at the end of the day? What are you thinking at the end of the day? Because thoughts lead to feelings, lead to behavior. I'm so stressed out. I just feel so stuck and horrible. Leads to feeling bad, leads to I'll have a drink and then I'll see what's in the kitchen. But if you allow yourself to say, I feel bad, I feel stuck, I'm stressed, I'm both resentful and happy to be here. Like I'm holding opposite feelings. Then you can start to process that. And how do you do that? Again, you can't sit your way through it. So first you think about it, you identify what is it that's really in my mind? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? Then you express it. It's not enough to identify it. Identify it, let's use anger. Identifying it is, oh, I'm really mad. I'm really resentful. Okay. That's just identifying the feeling. How you express it is you say, I'm really upset and mad and resentful because I am stuck in the house, because I feel constrained, because I'm not fully living my life. And I'm older now and I feel like I'm babysitting a family member. I feel like I'm, you know, stuck in the house. I feel like a mom of a baby, whatever it is. I'm not trying to read your mind, Sandra. I'm just imagining what you might feel, what I would feel in that situation. And you want to be able to recognize those thoughts and feelings without judging them, without feeling bad for having a feeling. A feeling is just a feeling. A thought is just a thought. It doesn't mean you're a bad person if you feel resentful for caregiving. If that were true, every parent would be a bad person, because at a certain point, every parent is like, oh, like, I can't take it. This is too much. There's a reason that the book Go the F to Sleep is a bestseller. Because every parent has been there. Go the F to sleep. Only the book is not actually called Go the F to Sleep. You know what it's called. Because we get frustrated with people we love. We get frustrated. We get annoyed. We just feel what we feel. It's okay. So you want to start saying, I feel frustrated because I feel stuck. I feel like I don't have enough of my life. I feel like I'm constrained. I'm not doing things that I want to do. I feel like my life is too small. It's really upsetting. So you really, really have to get out there and express fully and completely what are the thoughts that are making you feel that way. So you express them. Identify, I'm angry, resentful. Express, because of this, 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 and this, and this. And you really just exhaust all the reasons why you're feeling that way without judging yourself. You're not a bad person for having a feeling or a thought. Thoughts are not actions. Thoughts are not actions. You know, wanting to do something or not wanting to do something is not an action. It's just a thought. Okay, then the next step is you've got to comfort yourself with words. So often it's, oh, I identified what I was feeling and I don't feel any better. No, of course you don't feel better because you haven't expressed it fully and you haven't learned to respond to yourself. Haven't learned to respond to yourself with words. And comfort words, like comfort food, is really a wish to be comforted by someone else. We talk about comfort food, but what we really need is comfort words. And we need those words from us to us. So of course I feel this way. How could I not feel this way? It is really hard to have a tough day caregiving and then not be able to leave the house. That is tough. Anyone in my position would feel this way unless they were possibly a saint. And there are no human saints. I say that like it's true. That may not be the case. But anyway, no saints who are alive. There are no people who are that saintly, who are just so benevolent and benign that they have no human needs. Maybe Gandhi. But of course, it feels bad. Of course, I feel this way. How could I not? This is tough. This is upsetting. It's affecting me. I feel this way because of the situation. So that's validating and acknowledging. And then you reassure yourself. But you know what? This is not going to last forever. Maybe I'll think of some creative ways to get people to come here when I can get, and I can get away for an hour or something a day. Maybe I'll come up with some solution. I'll try to be creative. Maybe there's a different way to deal with this. But if not, this is not forever. And I've got to really take super good care of myself while I'm in this situation. Right? Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So, Sandra, for both alcohol and eating, think about your thoughts. Express your thoughts and feelings. Those go together. And then respond to yourself with words. That's how you deal with it. Instead of anything along the lines of toxic positivity, which is, oh, it could be worse. Oh, I should feel blessed to be able to help my family member or whatever it is that people tell each other. That's toxic positivity. And by the way, maybe you do feel blessed, but you can also feel resentful. We can feel things that are in opposition to each other. We can feel very happy to be able to help and very resentful that we have to help. We can feel both. That's being human, holding things that are opposite. So I would do that. The other thing that I would do, so that's the psychological part. Sometimes we drink and we eat to relax our bodies. And if I just say, hey, Sandra, or hey, Amy, or you know, whoever I'm seeing right now on Instagram, just relax. Relax. What's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. Absolutely nothing. Nothing will happen. If I tell you, hey, relax, nothing will happen. You can't just relax. You have to give yourself something to relax against. And that's where the progressive muscle relaxation exercise can really come in handy. That's when you tense up all your muscles. Like you just tense them up really hard, like just tighten all your muscles. You're supposed to do it progressively, but I think it just works if you just do all your muscles at once. Like you just tighten your legs and your abs and your arms and you just tight, 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 tight. And you hold it for as long as you can, at least 10 seconds, more if possible. And then you just release. And what you will feel is relaxation. That will give you just a little bit of time to kind of exhale and go. And that relaxation of your body can lead to a little bit more of a relaxed mind. And then you can think about what's going on, or you can do something kind for yourself. You can do something you enjoy, even if you're stuck in the house. What can you do for you? And that's where you get really resourceful. So try that, because just having that, those few moments of relaxation allows you to be able to think better. All right, so thank you, Sandra, for that question. And then I have a question from Chad. He says, can you get used to, quote, writing out emotional eating mostly out of boredom? Now, this is an interesting question because it involves both writing out and boredom. So you cannot just use willpower to kind of make it through. What you use willpower, maybe willpower to write it out for just a few minutes at the most. In my book, I talk about riding the hunger wave, riding the binge wave. So when you feel that pull to the kitchen, right? Like you're just, you feel like you can't stop and you're just getting pulled to the kitchen. You're thinking about everything in the fridge or the pantry and you just, it's in your mind and you just feel like a giant magnet is pulling you into the kitchen. That's when you ride the binge wave. And think about it this way. With waves, a wave starts and it builds 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 an intensity and it just gets stronger and stronger, like that urge to binge. And then eventually it crests and it crashes. So what you can do is ride that out, ride that binge wave, but for 3 minutes at the most, like that's about the most you can do. And then you'll get that relief, yes. And maybe that urge to binge won't be as strong, but that's when you've got to get curious and say, okay, what was that about? Why did I feel pulled to the kitchen? What is going on with me? So all that that writing out feeling does, all that emotional surfing does, is give you just a little bit of space to start to think and consider what's going on within you. Because if you don't figure out what's going on within you, if you only look at what you're eating and not what's eating at you, if you only look at what you're eating and not why, you're going to always struggle with, you know, it's going to feel like it's willpower and control or addiction or something like that. And it's not. If you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. Absolutely. So I also want to talk about boredom, because both Sandra and Chad brought up boredom. And here's the thing about boredom. We often think we're bored when there's something else going on, right? Boredom is just about not having something to do. But often we say that we're bored when we're really talking about something else. We use it as an umbrella term for something else. So for example, avoiding uncomfortable emotions. It's easier to say that you're bored than it is to say you're sad or scared or lonely or whatever, instead of consciously recognizing that you're upset, sad, anxious, afraid, depressed, what have you, we convert that into boredom. So be very curious about, what is it that I mean when I think that I am bored? Also, we talk about being bored when we're not challenged, we're not intellectually stimulated, we're not challenged, we're not doing anything interesting in our lives. Feeling bored is just a way of describing that you need something more engaging. You need to engage your mind. You need to engage your creativity. Something is missing. It can also be a sign of depression, of burnout, when you just have this lack of interest in doing anything and everything seems really blah. You might say you're bored, but maybe you're depressed. Maybe you're burnt out. Maybe something else is going on. We can also say we're bored when really what we're feeling is a lack of purpose, a sense of being unfulfilled, lacking direction in life, not having what we need in life, a sense of emptiness, really. And sometimes we confuse emptiness with boredom. So the meaning of boredom really varies from person to person. So really look at what is it for you? Because generally speaking, boredom is never boredom. Boredom is always code for something else. This is from Remy. She says, I can restrict fine during the day, but I start binge eating in the evening. Any advice? Oh, Remy, I have much to say. I have much to say about that. I can restrict just fine during the day. Why are you restricting during the day, first of all? What is that about? Because, look, there are different reasons that we end up binging at night or other times, but nighttime is a very common time when people start binging. And here's the thing, when you diet and you restrict during the day, that leads to binging for both physical and psychological reasons. Because physically, if you're depriving and you're restricting and you're not eating enough during the day, you're going to get hungry, really hungry. And when you finally start eating, it can take time to register that you're full and you might end up eating too much, which is really more of a like overeating than binge eating, because binge eating is psychologically purposeful. So those are, binges that are driven by physical hunger. So Remy, first of all, I would look at why are you restricting just fine during the day? That's not okay. And by the way, dieting, weight loss diets always, always involve some kind of deprivation. which leads to overeating, which leads to binging. And that's not only because of hunger or, you know, not eating enough. Sometimes you're on a diet and yes, you're not physically hungry, but you are still deprived in some way and of the things that you love, maybe the foods you like that you tell yourself you can't have. The experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation, which means that you know you're not going to be able to eat your favorite foods, just makes you want them more, right? Deprivation just makes you want something more, or the anticipation of deprivation, which just makes you want something more. And this can lead to what I was talking about this in my Facebook community, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. If you're not a member, go ahead and join. But we were talking about the Last Supper mentality, which is I'm going to start my diet tomorrow. So today I'm going to have everything I'm not going to be allowing myself to have until I lose X pounds, which leads to essentially a binge before the diet. And there you have the diet binge cycle. And by the way, there was a study several years ago. They tried to prove that food addiction was real. And what they did was they told people, hey, people who describe themselves as food addicts, they said, hey, we want you to eat your forbidden foods. And they thought, well, these people are going to start eating their forbidden foods. And it was all, you know, cake and ice cream and chips and, you know, all the things. And the idea was, well, they're not going to be able to stop. They are going to keep eating those foods because they are addicted. And you know what happened? The people in the research study ate less. They ate less of their forbidden foods because they had permission to eat those foods. And that really points to the psychology of binge eating. You're not just, it's not just your brain. Your mind is also involved. And when you change the way you think, you change the way you eat. In another study, a dieter said, and this is a quote, when you're on a diet, it's harder to avoid unhealthy foods. Ice cream is something I like having once a week, but when I'm on a diet, I have to have it every single day. Right? When you're deprived, you want what you can't have. So Remy, first part of your question, and I know you weren't thinking about that. Your question was more about binge eating at night, but I can't help but notice you're restricting during the day, and restricting just fine. Those are three words that should not go together. You should not be restricting. You should be honoring and eating intuitively, or just eating intuitively as much as you can. As my friend Nikki Sharp says, eat intentionally, right? Think about what's going to nurture your body. Think about what's going to feel good for your body, and as opposed to what you cannot have. So when you cultivate that intuitive approach to eating, it is a lot easier. But you cannot eat intuitively in my experience of 23 years of doing this work. You cannot eat intuitively unless you deal with the emotional reasons why you are turning to food. It's very hard to cue in to your body when there are emotional reasons or distraction reasons. I need to come up with a different term than emotional eating, because emotional eating kind of sounds like I had a bad breakup and now I'm eating ice cream. It's so much more complicated than that. So back to eating at nighttime, because this is a very, very common question that I get and something that a lot of people deal with. They eat fine during the day. Maybe they don't restrict like Remy, but they eat fine. They can make you know, healthy choices. And then at nighttime, everything changes. So there are different reasons for why people tend to eat more at night. One is often we're tired at night and we try to change our energy levels. So we eat like high sugar foods and we try to like give ourselves energy at night when we're tired, which is the wrong response to being tired. When you're tired, what you need is rest, maybe a quick cat nap or something, or just some kind of ability to rest and recharge. We don't need to have sugar sugar is not healthy. It is not a healthy way to give you energy. You've got to really focus on what does your body need. The other reason for changing your energy level is, let's say that you are anxious at night. You're stressed out. You had a stressful day. You just feel, and you're just all amped up. You might choose some high fat, high sugar comfort food, high carb, as a way of sedating yourself and calming yourself down. So those are two ways that we use food incorrectly to change our energy level. But by the way, we're not consciously thinking that. We're not like, I'm feeling stressed. I think I'll have a lot of carbs to create a sense of relaxation in my body, hoping it will also relax my mind. No, we don't think that consciously, but it's unconscious. It's hidden. It's out of awareness, but not out of operation. It's what we're doing. And by the way, that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about unconscious thoughts. They're there, but we are not aware of them. But they have everything to do with our behavior, which can be a very disconcerting principle to realize, oh, there are aspects of ourselves that we're not aware of, but boy, do they affect our behavior. And that's why, as I often say, if you listen to the show or watch it, it's not logical, it's psychological when it comes to issues with food. However, what I just described were just sort of the wrong responses, like eating for energy, eating to calm down, restricting too much leads to binge eating at night because you're hungry or you're not able to have what you like. So you just want what you can't have. All of those are reasons for nighttime eating. But the primary reason for nighttime eating has to do with binge eating disorder, by the way, which is the most common prevalent type of eating disorder. And it is a treatable condition that many people don't realize they have. They don't realize they have a treatable condition, a treatable eating disorder, a clinically diagnosable eating disorder. They think they lack willpower. They think they lack control. They think they're a food addict. No, no. Binge eating disorder means you're using food for comfort, distraction, to numb yourself, or express or distract from feelings of pain, anger, anxiety, anything uncomfortable. And by the way, let me just take a moment and define what I mean by binge eating, because it's used a lot of different ways. I've heard people tell me, well, I ate 4 cookies. And other people say, I ate 40 cookies. Right? But so 40 cookies is actually more of technically a binge. But whether whatever you are eating technically qualifies as a binge, if it causes you distress, it needs your attention. So it doesn't really matter. Is that a binge? Is that not a binge? If it's causing you to be upset and you know that you're eating to resolve something emotional or something internal or something's going on that doesn't have to do with hunger or let me have cookies and just, you know, have a couple and it'll be good. If something else is going on, then it needs your attention. So binging, in the context of binge eating disorder, it's characterized by having a whole bunch of food in a single setting and sitting. And that amount of food is more than anyone would normally have at once. And you eat compulsively and without enjoyment, without sometimes even experiencing the taste. And you are filled with just remorse and self-hatred, regret, guilt, shame. So it's a way of dealing with something internal. It's using food as a source of comfort or distraction or a means to just kind of like go blank and get rid of your feelings temporarily. And after a binge, you may think, oh my God, what is wrong with me? It is more than regret over the food you ate. It's a sense of shame. And shame is, oh, there's something wrong with me, which leads to harsh self-judgment. It leads to lowered self-esteem. It's the worst. You don't just feel bad about what you ate. You feel bad about yourself. And that is not good. So binge eating at night, it is not about willpower. It is not about control. It is not about addiction. It's not even about food. And so here's what I would suggest. Remy, who said she starts binge eating in the evening, first identify, are you physically hungry or emotionally hungry? We feel physical hunger in our bodies, right? Our stomach gurgles, we get a headache or we get lightheaded, whatever. So it's really felt in your body when you are physically hungry. Emotional hunger, it's more in our minds. We're like, ooh, that sounds good, or that looks good, or I want to reward myself, or I deserve a treat, or I want to calm down. I want to feel better. So first, if you are binging at night, and if you're fine during the day, but you start binging at night, first ask yourself what's actually going on. What hunger are you feeling? Are you physically hungry or are you emotionally hungry? If you're physically hungry, which you're probably not, because most people, their binges at night are after dinner. So they have dinner, they're fine. And then, you know, the kitchen starts calling their name. But if you are physically hungry, you'll probably get a little bit hungrier if you wait a couple minutes, but not so much that you lose control. If you're emotionally hungry, you may become more aware of the underlying emotions that are the driving force behind that urge to eat. And by the way, that's when you do the surfing I was talking about, the emotional surfing, where you give yourself, you know, up to 3 minutes to just ride it out, ride the emotional wave. And know that it will get intense, that wish to go into the kitchen, it's going to get intense, and it's going to crest like a wave, and it's going to abate. And that's when you can really check in with yourself. What's going on with me? What's going on? What's this about? What's eating at me? And you can ask yourself, what is it that is bothering me? Imagine that I wave my magic wand, which I've been told works, just very slowly. Imagine I waved it over you and I said, hey, this magic wand is going to take all thoughts of food, weight, body image. It's going to take it all out of your mind. What's left? What's left? What would you be worried about? What would be on your mind? What would you be thinking about? Because our minds are incredibly good at protecting ourselves from unpleasant thoughts, unpleasant feelings. So we become so good at avoiding those unpleasant thoughts and feelings, we don't even know we're triggered. We think we're triggered by food, but we're actually triggered by something emotional, something situational, something is going on. It's your mind's way of coping with something else, right? Like maybe you're familiar with the story of Jenna. I talk about her a lot. I talk about her in my book. And she is the person who said, hey, I'm addicted to Chunky Monkey. Ice cream is like calling my name. I'm an addict of sugar. I'm a sugar addict. And her reason for this was she was watching TV. Nothing was bothering her. And ice cream, Ben and Jerry's, as she put it, was calling her name. Well, it turned out that watching the show, which was, by the way, her favorite guilty pleasure, Charmed, her favorite show. So she thought, hey, you know, nothing's bothering me. I'm watching my favorite show on TV. Clearly, I'm addicted to Chunky Monkey. Watching the show, which was about when the demon comes down and causes the sister to fight, activated all her own sister stuff because she had a really difficult relationship with her sister before she was consciously aware that she was being triggered by watching the show. Her mind protected her from that, and ice cream started calling her name. So instead of thinking about her sister stuff, now she's thinking about, oh my God, I can't stop eating ice cream. Ice cream was not the problem. And if we had said, okay, look, if ice cream calls your name, here's what you do. Go take a walk, go ride your bike, get on the Peloton, go, you know, call a friend, brush your teeth, do all the things that are distractions. It wouldn't have helped because ice cream was not the problem. It was the solution to the problem. The problem was her inability to face her problematic relationship with her sister. And ice cream was her way of comforting herself and distracting herself. But guess what? When she dealt with her complicated thoughts and feelings about her relationship with her sister and resolved it, she didn't resolve the relationship, but she resolved her feelings about the relationship. Ben and Jerry's stopped calling her name. Amazing, right? Ben and Jerry's stopped calling her name when she dealt with her hidden why. And that is why it's a real paradigm shift, but it's so important to think about when you think about binge eating. Food is not the problem. Here's the paradigm shift. Food is the solution to the problem, which is hidden often. We don't know that we are being triggered. But when we get curious and we look at the possible reasons for, well, what might be going on, then you can figure out what is the true problem and you can find a different solution. And that's when you really have a binge cure instead of being in recovery, which is always thinking about, okay, when ice cream calls my name, I'm going to do this and that, and I'm going to be, I'm going to think about it all the time. No, liberation is, I used to do that, but now I found new strategies to figure out when I'm getting triggered, what's bothering me. Now I know how to respond to myself, how to express myself, how to be with myself in a different way, how to communicate with myself and other people. Oh, it's amazing. That's the difference between liberation, which is when binging is in your rear view mirror, and recovery, which is when you've got to think about it all the time. So again, huge paradigm shift. When it comes to binge eating disorder, eating is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. Your challenge is to be a detective of your own mind. I call myself a detective of the mind, right? Because detectives look for clues and they don't judge the clues. Detectives don't say, that is a really embarrassing clue. That clue is mortifying. Oh, that's a horrible clue. No one can know that clue. No, we say, oh, that's a clue. Okay, now we have more information. And you are looking for clues to solve the mystery of why you are doing something you don't want to do, turning to food, binging, emotional eating, however you want to put it. And also why you are not doing something you want to do. Be healthy, go exercise, do things you love, do things for yourself, take care of yourself, all of this. You want to be a detective of your mind and figure out the clues from a place of curiosity, not criticism. That is so empowering. And when you change the way you think about it, rather than, oh my God, I've got to stop this terrible behavior, it's mortifying. And you say, what's motivating this behavior? What problem is this resolving? Then you can find answers. And when you find answers, you can face directly what the true problem is. You can't fight an invisible army. You just get beaten up and you don't know where the blows are coming from. It's just like, right? But when you make that army visible, when you turn what's unconscious to conscious, when you take what's hidden and bring it into the light, then you see that army of ideas and thoughts and feelings and all the things that are affecting you that are causing you to use food to cope. And when you see what you're fighting, you can fight back and you can win. Liberation. Yes. All right. And here is another question. So hopefully, Remy, that answers your question. So ask yourself, emotional eating or physical eating, why are you restricting? Are you physically hungry or emotionally hungry? What's actually going on in your mind? What problem is that resolving? And then when you ask yourself that question and you figure out, make that army visible, then you can fight back. So let me know how that goes, because if you're eating at night, something is eating at you, right? All right, this is a question from Lainey. She says she's had a lot of illnesses. She lost weight, but then she said after being a binge eater slash emotional eater, I gained weight once again. I want to eat healthy. I want to boost my immune system, but I find myself gravitating to the unhealthy foods that are detrimental to my health. If I know better, why can't I do better? It's very frustrating. Lainey, it is frustrating. I'm with you. I totally get it. When we know something and what we know and what we feel and what we do are so at odds, it's frustrating. If you come from a place of being frustrated of, oh, I know it. Why, if I know better, why can't I do better? Because it's not logical. Knowing is logical. It's not logical. It is psychological. There is a reason, a hidden reason for why you are making choices that are detrimental to your health. So I would wonder about different things. I would wonder about, if you don't have another way of comforting yourself, of coping, of soothing yourself, of responding to yourself in a kind, loving, reassuring way. If you don't have a different way of doing that, you're going to use what works. And if those unhealthy foods work, it's really hard to stop. Because then, if you stop comfort eating, then you have zero comfort. What happens is you have to find a new way of comforting yourself, showing up for yourself, being there for yourself, encouraging yourself. When you do that, then you don't need the old way of comforting yourself. So from your question, I would first say, cultivate a way of being there for yourself in a really loving, kind, friend way, instead of kind of cracking the whip. I don't know that you're cracking the whip, but I kind of extrapolate that a tiny little bit from what you said. So remember, if you take away your coping strategy, if your coping strategy is eating, and you take away your coping strategy, now you have zero coping strategy. That's untenable. So it's really hard to give up that unhealthy coping strategy until you have a new healthy strategy in place. The other thing that I would be wondering about, Lainey, is sabotage. Now, there are a lot of reasons for why we sabotage ourselves, but often we get to a place where we feel good. We feel good. We've lost weight. We've stopped binging. We feel good in our bodies, and then suddenly, you just reverse course, right? And it's like you can't, then you can't stop eating the bad things. You can't stop doing all the things that you've stopped. Now you're doing them again, and you wonder, why am I sabotaging myself? That is a good question if you ask it from a curious place, a place of being a detective of the mind. Yes. There are some reasons for sabotage, and I explore them in depth in my book, The Binge Cure. But one of the most common ones I see is the one that surprises the most people. Here it is: fear of happiness. It sounds crazy, right? It sounds nuts. Why would I be afraid of being happy? I want to be happy. I will feel happy when I feel good in my body. I'll feel happy when I'm, this, and the other. But something else might be going on, like, maybe you feel like if things are going too well and you feel too good, the rug's going to be pulled out from underneath you. We have so many expressions in our culture that speak to this, right? The other shoe is going to drop. The rug's going to be pulled out from underneath you. It was too good to be true. It was too good to last. All of these are societal and cultural prohibitions against trusting happiness. And if we are the agent of our own unhappiness, then nothing bad will happen to us out of the blue. But if you're making yourself unhappy and you feel unhappy about your weight, again, this is so unconscious. Consciously, it's like, yes, I want to be happy and I want to wear a size whatever and I want to rock the clothes that I want to rock and I want to feel good in my body and it's going to be great. I will be so happy. I will be elated. It will be the best day ever, the best life ever. It is going to be amazing, right? Consciously. But there might be an unconscious part that says, ooh, but if you don't feel bad about your weight, then something bad will happen, right? Something bad will happen. If you are the person who keeps you from paradise, you can never be kicked out of paradise by someone else. So you might have some conflicts about feeling, quote unquote, too good. and other things can happen. Often people have friends where they bond with their friends over weight loss. And every time they get together with their friends, they're talking about this diet or that diet or this workout plan or this trainer or this whatever. And what happens to those friendships if now you feel good, not by dieting, you've lost weight by changing the way you respond to yourself, by dealing with what's eating at you instead of focusing on what you are eating. Now, what are you going to do with your friends? Oh, you're not going to fit in. What's going to happen? What if you have nothing else to say? So some people want to keep fitting in with their friends, so they go back to their old ways. There can be many different reasons why. Or you feel like you feel guilty. People who have been raised in certain religious, with certain religious backgrounds carry with them a lot of guilt. And if you feel guilty about having needs or wants or being alive or having anything good happen, then it's almost like being happy is forbidden for you. Like you're supposed to suffer. Or there could be ideas like, oh, you know, good people suffer. It's somehow like morally right to struggle a little bit. It's morally wrong to be too happy, right? These are messages we actually get all the time. Or I don't deserve to feel happy. I somehow, you know, should feel bad. So there are all kinds of reasons why, Lainey, and I don't know if that relates to you, but it relates to someone who's listening, that if you are sabotaging yourself, there is some negative connotation to a sense of well-being. For other people, it may be a fear of being objectified or being sexualized or being seen in a certain way. I once had a patient who said, I refuse to lose weight because if I lose weight, then someone likes me, then it's conditional love. They have to accept me for who I am, and then I'll lose weight. So she was making this like conditionality that they had for her to be truly loved. Someone had to love her at her weight. That if she were to lose weight, somehow she'd be compromising herself and doing it for other people as opposed to for herself. So there are many different reasons why you might be sabotaging yourself. And you know, again, Lainey, I don't know if that fits, but I would say think about also unhealthy foods are detrimental to your health. Are you creating the anticipation of deprivation, or are you creating deprivation by not allowing yourself to have ever unhealthy foods, which just makes you want them more, which then this the Last Supper mentality. I'm going to have it all. I'm going to have all the bad foods. This is my last supper of decadence before I start my diet. And, you know, I can never have this until I lose X weight, or I can never have this because I have to be healthy. So that sets you up for, I'm deprived. So I want the thing that I cannot have, even though I understand intellectually that it is not good for me. We're complicated. People are complicated. Our minds are complicated. We are not logical. We are psychological. We are complicated and complex. And if you can get really curious and interested in, what is going on with me? What are the conflicting feelings I might have? Am I happy and sad about the same thing? Am I pleased but angry about the same thing? Am I anxious about the thing that I also want? To really ask yourself those questions is important. So you hear me say, be curious, not critical. That is the number one thing that you can do, because curiosity gets you answers. Criticism just makes you feel bad. And when you feel bad and you don't have a way to lift yourself up when you've pushed yourself down, knocked yourself down, then you're going to use food for comfort or distraction. So stay curious, be a detective of the mind, and find the answers. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Dr. Nina Sabel Rockland, psychoanalyst, here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I am here live on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, also live streaming on Instagram. or you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. And for a deeper dive into this topic and many others, please check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in every format, including Audible, where I read it to you. So get your copy now, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.